Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hello, and welcome to the Body Protest Podcast, a new intersectional body image podcast that takes a deep dive into our often complicated, occasionally treacherous relationships with our bodies. We want to figure out how we can all feel more at home in our bodies and what it will take to create a world that fosters positive body image. I'm Honey Ross.
And I'm Nadia Craddock. In each episode, we'll be combining storytelling with science to discuss body image, so how we feel about how we look in relation to our weight, shape, race, skin colour, physical ability, sexuality, mental health, and whatever else comes up.
This podcast is brought to you by the Pink Protest.
We are very excited because this episode we are talking to my dear friend Lolly Adefope, comedian, actor, and all-round wonderful person.
I think I was so excited when we met with Lolly that I completely
fanned up. And I think I said three words in the entire interview, so I'm sorry, honey.
I forgive you.
Sorry to Lolly too. But we talk about Shrill, the new Hulu series based on the book by Lindy West, of the same name. We also talk about a little bit about race, the world of comedy, changes in body weight and social media.
I think we were just having a horrible day, honestly. I honestly had just been dumped that day, so let's it was a cursed day. I mean, neither Nada and I were thriving. Lolly was of course wonderful as always, but this is real. This podcast is real, and we are learning on the job.
But you know what? I think half of it also, so one, I like was overexcited and clammed, and also was having like this weird day. And then also, you and Lolly were having this like really sweet conversation, and I was like, you know what? I'm just enjoying listening. I'm just enjoying like
the
being
chemistry is electric,
and like witnessing this like moment. You're talking about sharing clothes, and I was like, oh, can I share clothes? can I be part of the party?
You can always share clothes. I mean, like, my clothes would look like a tent on you, but you would rock it.
Well, okay. Should we have a listen?
Let's talk to Lolly. Self-love is true love. Honour the most important relationship in your life, yourself. Our sponsor, Womanizer, believes that every person has the right to pleasure and self-love, regardless of age, sexuality, size, and colour.
A wonderful way to learn to appreciate your body is through self-pleasure. Masturbation is a truly joyful way to connect with your body and learn to feel comfortable in your skin. Everyone should feel able to feel comfortable in their body and explore their own sexual needs and desires. In this house, we see masturbation as the purest form of self-love.
Unlike other vibrators, Womanizer products stimulate with soft pressure waves. It is stimulation without touch, meaning there is no chance of overstimulation or loss of sensitivity. Get yourself your very own womanizer at womanizer.com/UK so you can light a candle, run a bath, and have a mind-blowing night of sexy self-care. So I guess we should start with, how are you feeling today?
I'm feeling good. Feeling slightly stressed, a lot of work to do. I've got a deadline. I've got like a sort of a deadline that just seems to be like, you just need to have finished this thing now, rather than like in a week.
It's not like, we've passed the deadline.
Yeah, we've passed the deadline.
A dot in the distance.
Yeah.
We've moved on. Yeah.
And I kind of need a new deadline, but I know that they'll just be like, it's now.
That's average. I'm really
good. Yeah. But so I'm working a lot, but feeling good. It's a beautiful day. Mm-hmm. The birds are chirping. The sun is shining. Generally feeling good.
We famously often share clothes.
Yes.
We have absolutely. Done, you've borrowed many a gown.
Yeah.
A gown.
It's a one-way thing.
It's one-way. As I said that, I was like, hey.
Yeah, yeah.
Taking for a ride.
And I forgot to bring your dresses today as well.
Oh, no, it's fine.
I'll please. Bring them next time.
Keep them. They're yours. No. Please give them back. Please, I miss them. And one of the things we bonded about when we first met was like what it's like being like a big girl in this small world.
Mm.
I kind of want to talk a bit about what it's like for you being like, would you say you're plus size?
I think I wasn't always plus size. So it's an interesting thing when someone has always been a plus size person, when someone has put on weight to become a plus size person. Mm. So like, I think I've put on a bit of weight in like the last few years. But when I first started out in comedy, I wasn't plus size. But then it's interesting doing stuff like Shrill because it's like, you're kind of like doing a show where you're like, the word fat is not negative, it's not a pejorative word. Mm. But I'm saying that as someone who never actually has been called fat until more recently. And so then there are like reviews of Shrill that are like, and she has a fat roommate. And I'm like, oh. Like knowing that it's not negative, but also being like, this is new to me.
It is interesting as well because, I mean, I definitely exist in a bubble where fat isn't a negative word. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes you step out into the outside world and then yeah. people are like, you're fat. And you're like, yeah. oh, thank you.
Like, yeah,
like,
yeah.
It's hard to digest because I'm like, I know in the circle that I am in, yeah. everyone's like, fat's great, fat's yeah. beautiful. And then you kind of go out into the real world and you realise that not everyone's head is there.
Exactly, mm-hmm. yeah. You don't know where it's coming from in people. So you can't always take it as a positive sometimes.
But I guess that kind of leads on to the question of like, when you were doing Shrill, did it kind of change your relationship with your body?
I think when I was reading it, especially, it was quite like eye opening. Especially, there's a bit where Lindy says in the book, like your life doesn't have to start when you lose weight and stuff mm-hmm. like that. And like I think even when I was like wasn't technically plus size, there were still moments where I was like in November, I was like, okay, January 1st, like mm-hmm. everything's gonna start, and like okay, today's Friday, so Monday everything's gonna start. And then you just get to a point where you're like, you can't live your life saying that for like 40 years because it'll just be a constant cycle if you keep thinking that that's when things are going to start.
Yeah, you're kind of like, what's the point? Like,
yeah,
I should just
yeah.
be happy now.
I should like, be happy now, and I yeah. should like look after myself, and that is what's going to make me happy rather than just like prescribing myself to someone else's standard of what I should look like.
Yeah. And how long do you think it took you to get there?
I think it probably happened because I put on weight and then I was like, okay, this is something I need to think about because am I going to be thinking about this for the rest of my life or could I be using this energy to
yeah.
do things mm-hmm. and like make things happen?
Yeah.
Maybe like in the last like few years, I think.
This is going to sound really creepy, but I remember once seeing that you'd shared a tweet which was like, should I worry about my arm flab? Should yeah. I deal with my one life?
Yeah, Catherine Cohen.
It's
yeah,
such yeah. a tweet, but
it's
like,
incredible. It's my
really
mantra.
It really makes you think. Yeah, because yeah, you're yeah. just like, why am I thinking about this?
Yeah, yeah. I feel like you can worry about the flap on your arms for 1 minute of every year. That's like enough time to worry about.
Prescribed amount of time, that's okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think that's okay.
Yeah.
You've got 1 minute per year.
Yeah, exactly.
Use it how you please.
Either like do something about it or be happy with it and like just leave it at that, I think.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So how did you get into Shrill?
I did a self-tape. I got sent a self-tape uh-huh. by my American agent. And it said that the character was African-American. And uh-huh. I was like,
well, they're asking me.
So I sent them an American version and a British version, uh-huh. and then they liked the British version. So then I went to LA and did a chemistry read with AD, mm-hmm. and then got the part.
Iconic.
Thank you.
I mean, it's very interesting though because that very much made the role your own. Like you fully, took
yeah,
role, like,
yeah,
you put your stamp on it because it's now a young British woman.
Yeah, yeah. In the beginning, they said like. I met with AD and Jesse, who directed the first episode, and they said, like, so if there's any stuff in the script that doesn't feel like it's in your voice, like, feel free to change it. And so I think there were, like, a few words that, like, I think, like, American people don't realise that British people wouldn't say certain things because they're just like, this is what American people say. And then you're like, I would never say that. Just, like, the tiniest thing that makes such a difference.
When did you start out in comedy?
I started, I think, about 5 years ago. So, like, I graduated in 2012, and then I got an got an internship at The Invisible Dot, which is a comedy production company, and then also worked full-time. And then my internship finished, and then... No, sorry, also worked part-time when I was doing my internship. Then my internship finished, and then my job became full-time, my very, like, boring office job. And I think I did that for maybe, like, 18 months, and then was like, oh, I really want to go to Edinburgh and, like, do, like, either, like, 10 minutes every day or just, like, start out doing something. So then I quit my job, which most people, like, wait years to do. And I was like, no, I've done 4 gigs. I think I want to quit my job. So then, I went to Edinburgh in summer of 2014 and just did, like, gigs here and there and then, like, carried on after that.
It's interesting, though, because even 5 years ago, the climate was very different.
Yeah.
And I feel like now things are a lot more progressive and a lot more diverse. But, like, I feel like when you were starting out, you were kind of, like, one of the first, like, out there, like, women in comedy. Like, definitely, like, it was, like, very different seeing, like, such an out there woman, like, person of colour, like, thriving in comedy. And,
Thank you so much.
No, but it's true, like, you are so amazing because you just were like you said, like, 4 gigs and you were like, right, okay, this is it. Like, I'm doing this.
Yeah.
What was it like coming up in that kind of, like, very male dominated?
Yeah, it's like a weird thing because, like, obviously, like, I talk a lot about, like, representation and diversity and stuff, and I always say, like, how important it is to see yourself. And then at the same time, I was just, like, recklessly confident, even though I wasn't seeing myself anywhere. I was just like, I want to do this. So if the boys can do it, then I'm going to do it as well, kind of thing. So I think I sort of used the fact that things weren't as diverse as I wanted them to be as, like, motivation almost. I was just kind of like, if all of these white men are allowed to do it, then why can't I do it, basically.
I want to go back to Shvill, actually, for a minute, because your character, Fran, is supposed to be, like, very, like, confident in, like, almost as, like, a, not too much, like, the black best friend type thing, but kind of does support...
AD.
So then, like, how much do you feel that you relate to Fran? Like, do you think you're similar in that way? Like, do you feel like you play that role?
I think I definitely am that role of, like, seeing, like, amazingness in friends that I have and being, like, why do you care about, like, these stupid boys when you're so amazing. I definitely have that, but I think she's much more confident than me in herself. Although, I mean, having said that, I just said that I quit my job after 4 months, so maybe not. But I think the element, because there's an element to Fran where she sort of doesn't really realise that AD has ever felt these things about herself and has ever felt this, like, lack of self-esteem. And I think, like, all women have felt that. I feel like, unless Fran's sort of hiding, and maybe she used to feel like that and doesn't feel like that anymore. But there's definitely a sense where she's like, what? You feel like you're bad. I feel like I'm amazing. And I definitely have moments where I'm like, no. Like, you definitely have, like, lacks of self-esteem sometimes.
Yeah. But I think there are two different things, right? So, like, self-esteem, like, and then, like, how you feel about your body. Like, they're related, but they're separate.
Yeah.
So do you feel like you have... Do you see those as... How do they play out for you?
I don't really know. I think most of my confidence comes separate from my body. Not that like I have a lack of confidence in my body, but most of my confidence comes from, like, my sense of humor and, like, my values and, like, the way I see the world and stuff. Because, like, if you, like, almost like if you listen to the world and you take your perspective from what the world's telling you, then you'll just, like, crumble, I think, because the world is so, like, fickle and doesn't treat, like, women and black women with that much respect. So I think you have to, like, hold on to what you think is the most important thing and then, like, let your confidence come from that, I think, rather than from anyone else telling you how.
Have you always felt like that, do you think?
Yeah, but I think when I was a teenager, I was more like, I was like really frustrated because I was like, I'm so funny. Why does nobody appreciate this? And then as I got older, I was like, oh, I'm really funny. And that's, like, a really great thing to have. Whereas I think if I was younger, if I'd, like, been, like, really successful with boys and stuff when I was younger, I would have felt like that was what my worth was. And then if that changed, then I'd be like, oh, I have no worth now. Whereas I've always just been like, I know that I'm really funny.
Were you always like, I hate saying this, but, like, class clown?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I was like...
Like, Lolly, please get off the desk.
Yeah. There was once when we had a new teacher who was, like, he wasn't fit, but he was, like, fit to, like, a girl's school.
Standards. Yeah. You're like, oh, he has a starved face. Girl's he has a human face. Yeah. Wow.
And then I don't know what possessed me to do it, but this girl, like, who was my friend in the class, whispered to me, I think he's got a nice ass, which is mad. Like, I don't think, like, even as like a 14-year-old, I don't think I even thought like that. And I don't think she did either, but she was like, I think he's got a nice ass. And then I went, Laura thinks he's got a nice ass. And thinking that it would just be like a classic, hilarious thing to do.
Like classic band.
Yeah. And then he was like, really like...
traumatized.
Genuinely traumatized. And then the next day...
Well, he's actually here today.
Oh, no! he really had a grudge against me after that. And everyone else loved him because he was like the fun, cool teacher. And he just really didn't like me. It was stressful. But the next day, our head of year came into our form. Was like just looking really, really solemn and was like, oh, girls, something very serious has happened. And basically like explained the story and was like, who was this? Because like, I'm not sure if he had told her who it was or she knew and she was just like making it more dramatic. But she was like, who was it? And if nobody admits to it, then you're all getting detention. And so like very slowly I like raised my hand and I was like, it was me. and then I had to go to her office and she was like, she said, do you think this was an appropriate thing to do? But I thought she said, do you think this was an inappropriate thing to do? So I went, yes. And she was like, are you joking? Anyway, yeah, I was a class clown. Yeah.
It's really interesting because I actually didn't know you'd gone to a girls' school. I mean, some friend I am.
But can't you tell?
What do you think that, like growing up around lots of girls' schools, if you're like, girls' schools get a really bad rep. Like, people are like, girls' schools are so bitchy. Like,
yeah, yeah.
How did you find that climate, like, growing up?
I mean, they are bitchy. I think, at least, like, in my experience with them and the people that I've spoken to, they are quite bitchy. But I just think, like, I'd rather try and, like, survive through the bitchiness and have, have been focused on other things than boys. I think I would just be so distracted. I think there are people who wouldn't be that distracted, but I know that I would have been. And so I was just quite glad that I could like focus on academia, which sounds a bit like lame.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
But do you think in terms of like growing up around girls, was there like a kind of point of comparison? Was there, like, how did that affect you?
Yeah, I think, there's definitely a point of comparison. And also when I got older, like when I got into like year 11 and sixth form, like my group of friends just naturally all had very small frames and I couldn't really see that. I was just like, oh, I'm big and they're skinny and I'm black and most of them are white and that's why I'm not successful with boys or whatever. And also I was like, I'm really funny and they all find me really funny, but nobody seems to value that as a thing. So I definitely like compared myself to like people all the time. And I think people sort of didn't really realise how much. It's just like that thing of people saying, like, oh, I'm colourblind and, like, I don't see colour and stuff. But I think people didn't really realise how much, actually, they had quite a lot of, like, unconscious bias about stuff and, like, would make jokes that I would think, I don't think that's okay. But I didn't really have the, like, I couldn't really articulate why. And I just knew, like, well, I'm the class clown and I make jokes all the time, so I can't be the one who's, like, really defensive when someone else makes a joke.
That's really shit.
Yeah. But then it's kind
so
of
thing, sorry.
You know, you only realise, like... I only realised this, like, after I graduated, all this, like, this stuff, like, bubbles up inside you. And then you tell other people who are, like, woke now, and they're like, that's not okay. And you're like, oh, yeah.
That's really interesting, though, because there is now such a kind of, I don't want to say performative, but there is such a performative wokeness of people being like, I want to say the exactly right thing all the time.
Totally.
Which I do agree. I, like, obviously, like, that's not me being like, well, God, the PC brigade. Yeah. I obviously want to be, you know, as woke as I can be and saying the right things, but, like, have you found that, like, I mean, I'm already pissed off at asking this question, but, like, have you found that that's hindered your comedy? Because I always think that, actually, people who say that that is censorship aren't being creative and are just racist shit.
Yeah. As in, does it affect my comedy trying to be more woke?
Yeah, or trying to be, yeah.
Yeah, no, I don't think it does. Like, no. That's probably why I'm so against all the people who say that, yeah, like you said. Like, I've never felt like it's hindered me. I think also because... like, I'm friends with people who would rightly take offence at the right things.
Yeah.
And so when I picture my audiences, I'm not picturing, like, some, like, beery guys who want to hear me say controversial things. I'm picturing, like, interesting people who want to, like, hear interesting points of view and, like, varied points of view, not just, like, the most controversial thing or the most, like, shocking joke that they can hear.
Didn't, like, critic that your first show kind of say, like, well, why didn't you...
talk about race more.
Yeah, they were kind of more like, oh yeah, it was basically an article actually. Some of them were reviews, but one of them was an article that was like about how in the 90s I think it was in the 90s, like whenever comedians who were like people of colour would come to Edinburgh, they kind of had to talk about their race, and that's what most people talked about. And the article was kind of being like, and now look, there's loads of people and they don't even mention it, and like, look how things have changed. It was just like a very weird tone. I don't think they meant it as like, they should shut up about it. But it kind of was like, this is what I mean, like people sort of don't really realise they're like bias in what they're saying. Like, you should just let people talk about whatever they want to talk about. And I think, and because in my first show, I had like consciously thought, okay, this is my first Edinburgh. I want to prove that I'm really funny. And then next year I'm going to talk about interesting things. I don't want to like launch it and try and do two things at once. And so like people saying that, I was kind of like, but I had a plan for my second show and it was going to be really deep.
And like, you've ruined it. Now I feel like I'm just working to your agenda.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you feel like now with your comedy, are you still doing like a lot of stand-up and that kind of thing?
Yeah. When I'm not filming, I try and do lots. Yeah, in between.
Yeah, no, I'm just thinking like you're doing Shrill and you've got all this other stuff going on. But how do you like fit everything in? I don't know. How does any woman do it all? But do you feel like how much does your like, you know, what you look like come into your comedy, and do you feel like it has to, and you're saying that you put on a bit of weight, do you feel like that needs to become a joke or like something? Because I feel like the kind of the fat joke is always the kind of like the go-to. It's almost like you say it before anyone else can say it type thing, and I wonder like how much that plays out for you and how you think about all of those kind of things.
I think if I did stand up, it probably would play out more, because I think if the part of the reason I didn't do stand up in the beginning was because I was like, this is too vulnerable and I don't want to I don't want to completely like give myself away totally to an audience. But I think if I did do that, then I probably would reference those things. But because I do characters, I kind of try and I'm sort of not being myself that much. I'm kind of pointing out things that I've noticed in other people and like pointing out like mannerisms or like stupid opinions that other people have that I don't agree with. So it's not quite as personal. But I think if I ever did stand up, I think I probably would be that person. I feel like you have to be that personal, because otherwise it doesn't connect.
What's a character you've always wanted to do but been too scared to?
Maybe not a bit too scared. I've got so many characters that I was like, these are not funny.
I'm not too scared, like, this is weird.
I had a character that was like, that I do at the moment, that's a woman reading from her, like, she's doing a book reading from her book that's just come out, and it's just like, like pop feminism that's just like not feminism at all. But I kind of wanted to do, and then there's like a line in it where I say, this book was first written on Instagram stories, and then I read about Caroline Calloway like a few months ago and I was like, this is me, this is my character. And then I was like, actually it'd be quite funny to do a character like her workshops, that kind of like influencer workshop that's just not a thing, and it's like, have an orchid and like talk about your day. This will cost $150.
Like, sign me up.
Yeah.
Now, how do you feel about social media in general? Are you like big into Instagram, all of those things?
I think before I used to like tell myself like, you have to have it, you have to be on Twitter and Instagram if you want to be a comedian. It's promotion. Like, I spend 12 hours on it a day and that's work. And now I'm like trying to, like, Twitter, I think I'm, because Twitter I basically use for like finding out what's going on in the world, which is not the best thing anyway, but I use that quite a lot. But Instagram I'm trying to distance myself from a bit, because I can see it like melting my brain, and you can sort of see like in your brain like the way you think of things and the way you compare yourself to people, and you can like see it happening in front of you, and I'm like, this has got to stop.
That's really interesting, because I do find that a lot of people are like, I surround myself with the worst Instagrams of, like, I don't personally, as people talking, but like they follow just like exclusively like Victoria's Secret models and people that make them feel really bad about themselves.
Yeah.
I'm like, you can create a really nice, safe bubble for yourself. It's so interesting. It's like who you choose to follow can completely change your day.
Exactly.
If you turn on your phone in the morning, look at your Instagram and see just like stuff that's going to make you hate yourself, you're like, oh great. Go out into the world like, well, why do I even bother? But if you follow like, I just follow like frog accounts, like frogs wearing hats and frogs and like political accounts, and I'm like, this is
it does
great.
Change it changes. I started following this dentist, my friends like posted in her story a video of a dentist removing like plaque from someone's teeth.
Ooh,
and
I
was like
that.
this is all I want. And like, yeah, when you do that, like, it does change everything. I think I used to follow like loads of like girls who had cool clothes because I was like, oh, I want like inspiration for what clothes to buy. And then after a year, I was like, all of these people are a size 6. Why am I following these people? It doesn't help me at all. It just makes me think, oh, I want those clothes and I can't have those clothes. Yeah. So yeah, I'm trying to follow more dentists. And also you notice how much your explore page changes. Because my explore page just used to be like girls in bikinis. Even though I didn't even follow people like that. I think Instagram just sort of makes it happen. And then slowly my explore page is becoming like slime.
Slimes and dentists.
Slimes and dentists.
Like, that's what all my explore page is, and I love it.
Yeah, a lot of toenails on my explore page.
Oh, no, Lolly.
But a lot of food as well. I get quite addicted to watching those like really intense food videos that are like 3 gallons of cheese, 3 gallons of pasta.
What?
Have you seen, it's called
like a mukbang?
No, it's just like someone, it's just like, you just see the hands of someone cooking. It's like a food tutorial and they've got music over it. But it's like, it's always like the greasiest, disgusting stuff.
I love like Inside of Food where they're like, this place in Brooklyn is selling the biggest hot dog. And you're like, I will never go there, but I love that I know that this exists. Exactly, like, I'm like, great.
And it's always a very small, tiny girl, like, biting into one slice being like, amazing.
And I'm like, good for you, this is true. Like, if it works.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know if you'll feel comfortable talking about this, so feel free to like be like, absolutely. Obviously, there was the kind of Christmas controversy of you tweeting. I mean, I found it fucking hilarious.
It was a joke.
Yeah, someone's dreaming of a white Christmas.
Yeah, yeah.
But you obviously got a lot of shit for that tweet. Do you want to, for people who don't know, explain to Nadia what happened. Did you know? Did you see it?
So I have heard it was like, a lineup of like 24 comedians. All white. And then you tweeted what someone's dreaming of a white Christmas.
Yeah,
is that,
it was a Christmas, that's that legit. Christmas charity gig.
Right.
And the charity is what people took umbrage with. But yeah, I just tweeted someone dreaming of a white Christmas with a picture of the lineup, which was 24 white comedians, 19 white male comedians. And then the tweet went viral. It was so funny that it went viral. And then just like people from all around the world were getting involved because it just turned into like comedian criticizes charity gig for not having black people on. And then I felt like I had to then explain what I meant, which was annoying because it's like,
because nothing makes it not funny.
Exactly. I was like, it was just a joke, like a standalone joke. And then it felt like, because so many people were sort of putting words in my mouth, I had to say like, no, what I actually think is that, this poster looks mad if you have like any sense of like diversity and what the world looks like.
But more I think I'm kind of interested in is like kind of the emotional toll of like receiving like that much shit from strangers online. Like that's something I've spoken about before, where it's like you receive like a lot of negativity, because also I'm sure like a lot of it wasn't charity related, it's just people being like, I don't like this.
Yes, so many people, like there was one guy who was like, because I tweeted because it all got so overwhelming, and I was like, okay. Because whenever like stuff gets like that, I think, okay, if I was in a play, what would the good character do in this play? And I was like, okay, the good character would donate to the charity. So I was like, okay, that, like, it boils down to the fact that I want the charity to prosper, and also I want to say my piece about this thing. So I tweeted like, oh, I'm donating to this charity, and explained like what I thought. And then some guy was like, if you donate to the charity, what's the 6-digit verification code that they give you when you donate to the charity? And I was like, and I was also knew that there was no code, so I was just like, going to that much, going to those lengths to try and prove me wrong, it's like, it was just mad.
Yeah.
And at that point I was just like, there's sort of no like winning with it. Like, these people don't want to be convinced of anything. No. They just want to,
they're just an angry mob.
Yeah, like Paul Joseph Watson tweeted about it, and then obviously like set those people on me, but then didn't tweet anything else, just like tweeted it, put it out there for like people to pile on, and then obviously doesn't actually care, didn't like, didn't argue with anyone or didn't like say anything else. And also I was filming at the time, and the other day I was watching they made a blooper reel of the thing that I was filming, which is Ghosts on BBC One. Check it out on Monday night. But they made a blooper reel, and in like a few of the scenes you can see me in the background like on my phone, like really stressed.
Oh my god.
Just like in the midst of everything, like, I've got to tweet this, I've got to explain what I was doing.
But it's so interesting that, like, it was clearly a joke. But then,
I know, yeah. I mean, and like, if a man or a white man or anyone had tweeted the same thing, it would be like, oh, what a controversial joke. It wouldn't be like, how dare you try and desecrate this charity by
being too PC. Yeah, because it's clearly like, you're clearly not anti the charity.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it's just like, people just like to get angry.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, people just thought that for some reason, people wouldn't donate to the charity because I tweeted that. And it's like, if that happened,
I don't think those people really thought that.
No, well,
I, like,
yeah,
I
yeah.
think that's bullshit.
Yeah, they, you know, there were some people who were like linked to the charity, or like people who like had like family members who suffered from the disease and stuff, who were like, I really hope this doesn't detract. This is a really important charity, and I had to sort of be like, I'm really sorry. Like, I don't think it will.
Yeah,
and also, my comment isn't about the charity. That kind of stuff was quite stressful. But then also, there's another girl whose brother had, I think it's muscular dystrophy, and she was like, I'm in complete support of you. And I was like, oh my God. You're so bad.
How do you feel about the potential of being considered a role model? And, like, especially, like, a role model for plus-size women, a role model for women of colour. Like, how does that feel? Like, does that sit well with you? Do you feel comfortable in that idea?
It's quite a stressful idea, but it's not completely, like, an idea that I want to, like, distance myself from. Because, like, when I, like, tweet stuff like that, like, the charity thing, and, like, whenever I call out stuff like that, there are people who are, like, thank you for doing this. This is very inspiring. And then that does make me feel like, okay, this feels like I am a positive role model.
Mm.
And also, like, just, like, working a lot and, like, being very visible feels like I'm a role model more for, like, the work that I'm doing rather than, like, who I am as a person and the decisions that I make. But also, I, like, wouldn't want anyone to go through what I went through with the charity thing, because it was quite hellish.
Yeah. I'm so sorry you went through that.
Yeah. So at the same time, I'm kind of like, okay, I kind of have to, like, I don't want to be telling everyone, like, yeah, scream about everything that you see. Like, you kind of have to, like, choose your moment sometimes.
Yeah.
But in general, I don't know. I guess I don't feel like, no, don't follow me, because then it suggests that I'm going down, like, the wrong route.
Yeah, you're the bad guy in the book.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And what do you do when you're feeling stressed, or, you know, if you're not feeling great? And is there anything that you do that's, like, your go-to things of, like, this is how I'm going to feel better in my body, this is how I'm going to feel good about myself? Mm. Like, do you have...
I play Candy Crush a lot. Very addictive. But also helps me to think, weirdly, because it's just so, like, nothing-y, almost.
Really interestingly, I read that apparently if you play Tetris right after a traumatic event, it completely, like, lessens the chances of you having PTSD.
Yeah, I used to play Tetris all the
time. Isn't that fascinating? Genuinely,
yeah. I can believe that. It's very soothing. And also, I can think more when I'm playing Candy Crush and Tetris than just, like, walking around, because you're just focused on that one thing, and then it's, like, everything else zones out. Or I have a bath.
Scarlett Curtis always says something very interesting, where she's like, the people who are, like, including her, my housemate, at the top of the leaderboard on Candy Crush are people who are going through the worst stuff.
Right.
I think Candy Crush is, like, a lifeline for a lot of people.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah, yeah.
It's like, that is the ultimate self-care. Like, forget about your face masks. It's Candy Crush. Yeah, yeah. Like, top tips.
Yeah.
I guess I kind of want to ask, where do you feel like you're at with your body and, like, your relationship to your body?
Mm.
And what would be a piece of advice that you could give to someone else, like, if they're kind of struggling with body image?
I think one thing that I have, like, learned over the years is I'm only going to be happy in my body if I'm happy in my body. Like, if I'm trying to, like, be a certain size or, like, look a certain way for other people, that's never going to be, like, a stable thing. And so you have to, like, be honest with yourself and say, like, okay, am I happy with, like, what I'm eating and, like, what I'm doing?
Mm.
And if I'm not, then change it for you rather than to, like, fit into a, like, certain thing that people might expect from you. Because there was, like, a period of time where I was like, you know what, I'm going to eat everything because I don't give a shit. And then I was like, that's not making me happy either.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at.
So you just kind of have to, like, take a moment and be honest with yourself and be like, okay, what do I want for me, not for anyone else? And just try and, like, slowly work towards that, and don't like, guilt trip yourself all the time for, like, making baby steps, because it's, like, it's never going to be an immediate process. But it's always going to be like a journey.
Thank you so much for listening to the Body Protest podcast, brought to you by the Pink Protest.
We would love it if you left us a review and some stars, preferably 5, on Apple Podcasts.
Preferably.
It will help other people find our podcast and join our Body Protest family.
Honey, where can we find you on social?
Well, I'm on Instagram at HoneyKinney, and you should also follow the Pink Protest at Pink Protest. Nadia, where can we find you?
I'm at nadia.craddock on Instagram, and you can also listen to my little work podcast, Appearance Matters the Podcast, where Jay Ponell and I talk about the body image research with some of the experts in the field.
This podcast was brought to you by the Pink Protest and produced by the wonderful Scarlett Curtis.
And thanks to our editor, Shola.
Thank you. Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.